Welcome to So-and-So, brought to you by Bernina, Made to Create. I'm Meg Goodman, and you're about to enjoy a casual conversation with a special member of the sewist and quilting community, a conversation about how they got started, what inspires them, what excites them, and their connection to this community. Our guest today is Mimi G, founder of Sew It Academy, Mimi G Style Inc., Pattern Making Academy, Vice President of Design and Brand Strategy and Patterns for Design Group, aka the Big Four. She's also the entrepreneur behind the award-winning fashion lifestyle and DIY blog, Mimi G Style. She recently co-founded Melanated Fabrics and Creative Center, a black and brown female-owned business that provides creatives a unique space to create, inspire, and support each other. What began as a hobby in Mimi's Los Angeles home in 2012 blossomed into an international brand with a daily engagement of more than 3.2 million followers across all social media platforms, 22 million page views, and 2.2 million unique visitors annually on her blog. Mimi G's courses on DIY sewing, self-empowerment, business coaching, and lifestyle that propelled her from blogger to internet sensation. She inspires women and men alike to embrace their power, find their voice, and discover their purpose. Mimi was a victim of abuse as a child, a teen runaway, a homeless teenage mother, and a domestic violence survivor, but she is clear that her story is not in her challenges, it's in her triumphs. Mimi G makes her home in Atlanta. She's a mother of four, wife, and a champion of women. Mimi, welcome to So-and-So.
Hi, thank you so much. I've never heard my bio read back like that to me, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm tired.
It's pretty incredible. You are busy. And we have a lot to talk about today. It's pretty incredible what you've done, what you've accomplished, and it's been a short time. I mean, you're successful. And where I really want to start out is the basics. How did you first learn to sew, and who are your influencers?
So I learned how to sew when I was really young. I was about 12 years old. During the summers, my mom would fly me to Puerto Rico to visit my father. And every summer I would go and I would spend all my time sitting in my aunt's workroom. She was a seamstress. She did formal gowns and bridal wear. And I was fascinated by her. I mean, just to see her take this piece of fabric and create these beautiful garments was just mind-blowing to me. So I would spend my summer sitting watching her. And she would kick over her scraps of fabric and I would hand sew Barbie clothes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my dad saw that I really had an interest. So he bought me my first sewing machine. And I started to take apart my clothes so that I could teach myself how to copy them and then put them back together. I didn't realize at the time that I was teaching myself construction and somewhat of a pattern making, but that's really what I was doing. And then I did it on and off for many years. That's really just how it started.
So what do you like to sew? What's your favorite thing to make and why?
Oh gosh, I love to sew a lot of things, but I would probably say dresses, which is mm-hmm. really funny because anybody who's read my blog has at least heard me say once or twice that I make dresses, but I really just wear t-shirts and jeans. I just like to make them.
You know, I've heard that from other people that they make things that they don't necessarily wear, but it's what they like to create.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, my day-to-day is pretty busy. And so, you know, a lot of times, you know, jeans, sneakers, and a t-shirt is what I need to have on because I'm moving and constantly, you know, up and down. And so for me, that's just like my easy go-to, but I love to wear and make dresses. I just don't have enough places to wear them to. Uh-huh. So I just stack them right now, you know, and until, you know, the next time I have an event to go, you best assure yourself that I'm ready.
You are totally ready for that. Now, you said you started to sew when you were 12, but mm-hmm. but your enterprise really began as a hobby for you in 2012. And what I'd like to know is how you got started with all of this, and Take us through the journey to where you are today.
Gosh, that's such a long journey.
It is.
I started to, like I said, I learned to sew really young, but I had stopped sewing when I was in my teens because I ran away from home when I was 15 years old and I never went back. So I spent a lot of time on the streets of Los Angeles. And, you know, it's hard to sew when you're homeless. So I sort of gave up that hobby for a really long time. It wasn't until I was probably in my early to mid 20s that I picked it back up. And for me, you know, coming from a very traumatic childhood, you know, being a victim of sexual abuse and, you know, as a kid and then domestic violence and being a teen mom and a runaway, all of these sort of things had taken a toll on me. And I hadn't quite yet reached the therapy enlightenment part of my life. So I was pretty much a wreck. But I didn't recognize it. I didn't know it. And so I just knew that I would have bouts of depression and really, really sad, dark times where I couldn't explain what was going on. And so I picked sewing back up to help me get out of that. And it became sort of my quiet place. I could go, I could sew, and it sort of took me away from everything that was going on in my head. Mm-hmm. I found it to be very therapeutic for me. What happened was I worked in film and production for about 16 years. And I would, you know, if anybody who's ever worked in production, film and TV knows that it's a lot of hurry up and wait. So long hours of doing nothing while setup is happening. And I would sort of browse the internet. And, you know, honestly, I thought I was the only person my age that was sewing. Like, I didn't even know that people were sewing. I just thought, oh, you know, I'm Latina. This is cultural.
Sure. And everyone else that sews is much older than me.
Right.
And sure.
Exactly. And so to my surprise, I started finding these sewing blogs, you know, and at the time, you know, I didn't even know what a blog was. I don't think anybody really knew what a blog was back in 2008. It was just sort of like this online journal that you would, you know, write and post pictures.
It was a very public diary.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it was. Yeah.
That's exactly right. And so I started finding all of these people that were sewing, but it was mostly quilting, home decor, children's clothing, that sort of thing. And I thought, gosh, I want to show and share some of the things that I sew because I really just love garment sewing. I've done home decor. I've done some quilting. I've done kids' clothes. I've done all the things. But garment sewing is really my jam. So I really didn't have an interest in it. And so I thought, gosh, well, what if I just started to sort of share what I'm doing? So I started my very first blog. And in 2008, 2009, was the first time I had started sewing with a commercial pattern. Because prior to that, I had, like I said, I'd just cut stuff up, you know, create my own patterns and, you know, just put it together as best I could. So I picked up my first Simplicity pattern and that really sort of changed everything because then I was like, oh, this is really cool. I can take all these things that I see on the runway and use this pattern to sort of modify it and create, you know, the vision that I have for what's in my head. And so I started posting about it and, you know, I had very fortunate moments in my career, right? It's not like I just got lucky. I just happened to come at very important parts of technology, right? I got in on YouTube, you know, very early on. Everybody was doing pictorials all the time in their blog posts and I'm a terrible student. I need to see something visually in order for me to understand it. So if I read something in a book, I sometimes have to read the paragraph multiple times in order to retain what I'm reading. So anything that I do with my hands was always, you know, much easier for me to sort of grasp. So I thought, gosh, I should make videos. So I did. I started making videos for YouTube, sharing a lot of free information on my blog. And it really just started picking up steam. And I think one, you know, like I said, I got in really early on YouTube too. Nobody else was really doing fashion sewing and sharing it the way that I was doing. And so those two things really helped to sort of set me apart. And then I started doing videos, which, you know, people really took to. They really loved being able to sit and watch and actually put something together without sort of guessing what that next step was before and after that pictorial. And really, you know, I did that for a couple of years, and I gained a lot of followers really quickly, which was, you know, really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, not long after I did that, I got my first licensing deal with Simplicity, which, to be quite honest, really changed the trajectory of my career.
Sure. So I want to go back to what you are very open about. Is it some of the things you went through as in your younger years, the abuse as a child, a teen runaway, teen mom, a domestic violence survivor? And your story, Mimi, is a story of hope. You talked about sewing, but I'd like to just ask what got you through this part of your life, and what advice would you give to others who may be in similar situations?
I think it's fortitude.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I really do think it's fortitude. I have always had this sort of like inner voice that would tell me that I was supposed to do something. You know, I always felt like I had some sort of purpose. I didn't know what it was or how it would manifest itself in my life, but something always sort of kept me thinking, this is just a moment. This is going to pass. You're going to do something. You're going to be someone. And there were times, to be quite honest, though, where I was like, this is nuts. Like, this is going to be my life forever. I'm eating, you know, Top Ramen with my kids with a candle lit because my lights are off. Like, you know, there were times where it was really bad, or I'm panhandling on the street trying to get diapers for my kid. You know, there were moments definitely where I was like, gosh, I guess this is going to be my life.
Yeah.
But I think I've just always had a spirit of just wanting more. I don't know. I have seen a lot of people, even family members who have had similar things happen, that just didn't quite, get past it or work through it, or were able to move beyond the circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, I really just think it's a choice. You know, I had the choice of working as hard as I could to, you know, try and better myself. I will say, Meg, though, that I think, you know, a lot of people see me being, oh, you were a teen mom. I had my first daughter. I was 16 years old. And I was literally a child on the streets with a child.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everyone, you know, there were people that, oh, she's really ruined her life now. You know, she's got a baby. She's 16. She's never going to do anything with herself. But I actually think that my having a baby so young is what pushed me to be better, because now I was responsible for someone else. When it was just me, I cared a lot less, to be quite honest. I really did. But now I had a kid that relied solely on me. And I think that really helped me, because at that point I felt I had no choice but to get it together. Mm-hmm. And I did the best I could. You know, it wasn't always great, but I did the best I could.
Sure.
And eventually I started working because I was too young to work. Nobody would hire me. I didn't have a babysitter. And, you know, obviously all those obstacles that young moms go through. But eventually I did. I started working, and, you know, little by little. What's funny to me is, you know, that's probably the number one question I get asked is, what would you say to others? And I just think that it's, if you can avoid letting the current circumstances define who you can be, then you have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I did. I moved forward despite my circumstances, and I do that still now.
And you listen to that voice, and it's a good thing you did.
I do all the time.
One of the things that you are really proud of is your role as vice president of the Big Four. So I'd like you to talk a little bit about that. How did you achieve this role, and what do you do? What do you do?
I do a lot. Oh my gosh, I do a lot. You know, that is actually very special to me. It's, you know, I've created several multi-million-dollar businesses over the last decade, and it's been incredible to be able to see something like my love of sewing generate, you know, such a big, successful career for myself. But when I was approached about taking on the VP position, I thought, gosh, do I want to go work for someone else on top of running all of my own companies, but it was literally like almost a mission for me. Like mm-hmm. I had to do it. And the reason I say that is because, you know, I signed on as a licensee for Simplicity in 2014. They took a huge risk on me. You know, when they signed me, I was the first blogger to have their own pattern line. And, you know, they didn't know if it was going to work. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't know. They took this risk on me. And, you know, I made a lot of demands, even just with the, you know, I didn't have anywhere near the following I have now. But, you know, I knew that I wanted to be in control of, you know, my designs. I knew I wanted to be in control of fabrication. I knew I wanted to be in control of my image, my branding. And they allowed me to do that. And so, you know, I became very, and still am very loyal to Simplicity because they took a chance on me and they gave me an opportunity that has done incredible things for my career. It put me in front of people who probably would have never seen me. Being in that catalog, being in Joann's, Walmart, Hobby Lobby, and giving me sort of that stamp of approval did really big things for me. And, you know, over the years, I think I had been through 3 or 4 of the buyouts. Every time they were sold and bought, you know, I went through every purchase and you know, I was the only one that they kept on over and over again. But, you know, numbers do a lot of talking. You saw a lot of patterns. If they'd be silly not to keep you. But, you know, for me, it felt more like I had to try and help the pattern business, because in order for my businesses to continue, Sewed Academy, Pattern Making Academy, Mimi G Style, Melanated Fabrics, all in order for all of my companies to flourish, I need the pattern business to flourish. Mm-hmm. And I could mm-hmm. see that over the years, it just wasn't. I mean, to be quite honest, it was awful. There were so many mistakes made every time that they were sold and bought. Because it's a whole new group of people coming in to take over a business. Many of them don't know the pattern business. They don't know home sewers. They don't know how close and personal that relationship is. And so mistakes were made over and over again. And I would literally like scream at the top of my lungs, like, oh my gosh, I want to help you. And you guys just don't listen. Very frustrating. Mm-hmm. You know, I couldn't do as much as I wanted to do. You know, I lend my voice and my expertise whenever they asked. I made myself available for consultations and whatever they needed. But it was painful to watch all, you know, all the different things that were happening. And, you know, the group that I had when I signed on was at this point, you know, almost completely gone. It was all new people. And so, you know, it was very difficult to sort of, you know, maneuver through all these new sort of execs and CEOs who are making decisions for a company that, you know, the product so well, you know, and you're like, you guys, that's a mistake. Mm-hmm. That's a mistake, you know, and I'm not one to hold my tongue. Everybody knows that about me. I say exactly what I feel, and, you know, and so, but I had very close connections to some of the people that were still there. And, you know, what ended up happening was, after the murder of George Floyd, mm-hmm. the sewing community rallied and they started, you know, posting the black box in solidarity of Black Lives Matter. And because I am such a prominent figure in the sewing community, when something massive happens like that, and there's a rally or there's something going on, I start to get a lot of messages, a lot of emails. Asking, you know, what I think, or am I gonna this, or am I gonna that? You know, mm-hmm. a lot mm-hmm. of times I don't want that pressure. I really rather just, you know, be the quiet person in the corner. But mm-hmm. unfortunately, I just can't, you know, I can't do that. And so I made a video, which I posted. Gosh, when I watch it now, I'm like, oh my gosh. But
and that's on YouTube. People can see this.
Actually, I posted. It's on my Instagram. It's on my IGTV.
All right, good.
And I, you know, I had just lost my baby at 5 months. And this was literally just a couple weeks after losing the baby. I got on my phone and I made this video and I started talking about, you know, all of the companies that I am licensed with and that I am signed to and who I'm under agreement with that I think, you know, are not showing their solidarity for the consumer, you know, that keeps their business going. And, you know, one of the companies that I called out obviously was the Big Four because I'm licensed to them. And, you know, I'm like, where's the black box? Mm-hmm. Really, that's what we were yelling. Where's the black box? You know? And unfortunately, that happened, you know, they didn't do it. You know, it's one of those things, Meg, where because I have a corporation, I understand the levels that have to be taken before you make a public announcement or before you post something. You know, there are things that has to go through sort of this chain that, you know, not everybody fully understands. Mm-hmm. But in that instance, you need to put up the black box. You know what I'm saying? And yes. So I said what I said, and I was very vocal about it. And, you know, people applauded me for, you know, oh, you know, so brave of you for you to call out companies that you're, you know, under agreement with. And I didn't see it like that, to be quite honest. I've made my own money from my own companies for so long. I don't live off that check. You know, that royalty check is nice, but I don't need it. Not over my own moral thoughts and feelings, of mm-hmm. course. Mm-hmm. So that's really why I was in the position to do that, you know. But I also knew that all it really took was conversation. You have to be willing to educate and have a conversation and talk. And so I left that door open. And of course, they called me immediately, asked me to come down. And mm-hmm. so I did. I sat with the CEO, and we, you know, I thought at best when my husband dropped me off, I was like, listen, pick me up in less than an hour. This isn't going to take long. And we ended up talking for over 3 hours. And, you know, I was able to understand some of what was happening behind the scenes, which a lot of people, you know, didn't understand and were just not privy to. And then, you know, I basically said exactly how I felt, and, you know, how even especially as a woman of color, and, you know, a licensee and a big licensee for your brand, you know, I felt sort of like, well, wow, how important am I really to, you know, to this company, that you're not showing your support. And so, that conversation led to a lot of other conversations. And that's when sort of the idea of me taking on the VP position came about. And that, you know, that took a lot. I think we negotiated that contract for like 8 or 9 months. That's how long it took.
So what you thought was going to be a quick, nice to know you, and it turned into something much more special.
It did.
And what do you do in the role? What's your job with them?
Really everything that's on that title, right? So when it comes to the patterns, so for instance, every time that we have a new line that's going to come out for each brand, right? McCall's, Vogue, Butterick, Simplicity, and New Look. I sit down with the designers. I review all of the designs. We do selects. So I select, you know, what those last final 20 patterns are going to be. Then we go through fabric, right? Swatching. I decide on, you know, fabrics. I give my suggestions, usually pretty strong suggestions. Mm-hmm. and then, you know, we go through the pattern making phase. I look at, you know, samples sometimes to make sure fit and proportion is right. I'm always available to the designers. So, you know, we talk about what their ideas are, what their vision is for the plan, for the line. And then, you know, we talk about photography. I am involved in the art department. I talk about branding. We talk about, you know, all of the things that I'm trying to implement. So like size inclusion, which is the very first thing that I tackled when I signed as VP, was that we need to increase our sizing. You know, mm-hmm. we're currently, the next release will show that we're at 38W, which for the big four is really incredible to be able to provide that, because for so long, it was just not taken either seriously or was just something that seemed like it was too much work. And it wasn't until I got there that I was able to understand what the issue actually was. You know, and it was sort of the same thing that I got when, as a licensee, I sat down with them years ago and I asked why we didn't make enough men's patterns, because my husband loves to sew. He learned to sew when we started dating. And their, you know, the response at the time was, well, they don't sell, obviously, as much as women's patterns does. And I said, well, is it that they don't sell? Or is it that we just give them really ugly designs that nobody wants to make? Are we ignoring the new sewer?
Mm-hmm.
Are we ignoring the younger consumer?
Sure.
That is more into fashion and style and doesn't want to make a, you know, son and father or father and son button up shirt. You know, they're over the khakis. They want something else.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said, well, if you want to make men's patterns under Mimi G style, you certainly can. So we did with, you know, my husband designing. and, you know, they're always top sellers. They do great. So I think that the same thing was happening for the plus size patterns, right? Is it that the plus size patterns don't sell, or is it that you're just not designing what they want to wear? You know, there was a time, and I do understand there was a time when, you know, if you were a plus size woman, the assumption was that you wanted to be covered up, or you wanted to be modest, or you wanted to wear loose fitting clothing. That is not the time. That is not where we are, right? That is not where we are.
No.
They are sexy and confident, and they want to wear all the same things that everybody else wears without it having to be an issue. And, you know, for many years, they wanted Mimi G patterns, you know, in extended sizing, and I couldn't do anything about it, you know? So I knew that that was definitely the very first thing I needed to tackle, was to increase the size, to create more men's patterns. I'm also working on, I just did because the new pattern envelopes will have it, but adding useful finished garment measurements to the back of the envelope. These are all small things that to me just seem like, why don't we do this? I need to know my bust, waist, and hip, you know, at the back of the envelope every time.
Mm-hmm. Several of our guests on this podcast have been people who do plus size sewing, body positivity, several guys who sew and design and create. So to your point, I think that's a big part of the demographic that had been ignored for a long time. And
oh yeah,
they are there and they are part of this.
Absolutely. The black and brown consumer was ignored. And so there have been a lot of changes, more changes that are coming. Obviously, you know, it takes time to implement things. The fact that we've been able to increase sizing as quickly as we did for me was, you know, something that I was very happy about. But, you know, it is still a corporation and there are still a lot of things, you know, there's money involved and time and staff limitations, all of which, you know, I'm trying, you know, to tackle. I'm involved in all aspects of the company, which I didn't realize I would be. But, you know, I'm happy to do it. It's really opened my eyes. I don't think that when people think about the big four, that they realize just how much input, you know, we put out every year, you know, 600-700 patterns a year is a lot of patterns, you know, for all these brands. And that takes manpower, that takes a lot of staff and time. And, you know, due to COVID, we had half the staff, you know, that we previously had. And so we were still, you know, trying to put out 600-700 patterns, you know, in the year. I don't think also that people realize, you know, all that is done to create that pattern, which for me was quite eye-opening. You know, I knew parts of it, obviously, because, you know, I've been a licensee for many years. But, you know, when I signed on as VP and I went through every single department and I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is really incredible. You know, going from merchandising and design idea to swatching, to creating the pattern, to creating the muslin, to creating photo garments. And then, you know, that's just that part. Then we have the technical development, line art, instructions, grading patterns, checking measurements, yardage charts, fabric layouts, illustrating the instructions. I mean, creating all the plate layouts for printing, which, you know, has also been a limitation. Translating instructions. Then there's artwork, photography, layout, supplement, cover, web pages, product pages, envelope. I mean, there's so much that goes into it. And that has to get done for each individual pattern for 600 patterns a year. So it's been a lot of, you know, a big learning experience for me, that's for sure. And then, you know, it's just been great to be able to have input on all of the designs that go out, on the fabric that's used, on the styling. You know, I have style calls once we get photography. So I, what shoes are you putting on her? What's her hair look like? You know, yes, belt, no belt. Like, I'm pretty hands-on.
It sounds that way. So now, in spite of everything else that you've been involved in, and what you just told us about is incredibly complex, you co-founded Melanated Fabrics. Tell us about Melanated.
Gosh, Melanated Fabrics was something I did with Brittany J. Jones, who's my co-founder. We have been friends for a very long time. We first obviously met online, and then she started attending my conferences that I used to do every year, and we became very close. And I became sort of a mentor for her. So, you know, whenever she had questions or she was working on something or had, you know, a sponsorship coming up, she would ask my advice. And so, you know, we talked quite often. And I remember we were having a conversation one day. She had called to ask my advice on something. She said, you know, I'm thinking of doing like buying 2 or 3 bulks of linen fabric to sell with my online courses. And I thought, oh, that's cool. So at the time I was redoing my site and I was thinking of doing something similar, but not purchasing fabric, instead sort of having relationships with fabric stores so that you could buy my pattern, buy the fabric, and it all be one seamless sort of experience. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm very much a big thinker. Like, my friends know if they have a business idea or something that they want to do, don't bring it to me unless you're really ready to do it, because I'm the one that's going to be like, yes, and this is what you have to do. I will lay it all out for you.
It's going to go.
And so that's sort of what happened. And I was like, we should start a fabric store. Like, let's do it together. And she was like, really?
And it was done. There it was.
And that, I mean, literally we went from like idea to opening our, you know, fabric store online a couple months later. Mm-hmm. And then in less than a year, we had, you know, moved to Atlanta and we opened the store and the Creative Center. And it hasn't even been a year since we opened the Creative Center. So a lot has happened in a really short amount of time.
So what do you do at the Creative Center?
So the Creative Center is basically it's an open source space. And then we also have classes and workshops that we do. We do obviously a Learn to Sew workshop, which is probably our most popular workshop. Everyone wants to learn to sew. And so we do a 4-week workshop. We also have different classes, like specific classes, maybe on making your own jeans, or my husband did a course on mastering the classic button-up shirt and things of that nature. And then mm-hmm. I'm also very much into shoemaking. So I think I'm going to start doing a in-person shoemaking class. So we do a lot of different things, but really it's just a place where you can come and enjoy the vibe, you know, take a class, shop really great fabrics. We're very much a boutique fabric store. So it's very unlike what people think of when they think fabric store, you know. It's very much like a boutique. It's very calming. It's, you know, everybody on staff knows fabric. They all sew. So you come in there and you ask the question and everybody can answer it. So that you know, you feel like you're coming in and you're getting expert advice. And it's just a really beautiful space. I unfortunately don't get to spend much time in the store because I travel quite a bit and, you know, running all the other businesses. But, you know, at least once a week or so, I try and get down there so we can look at inventory and make decisions. And Brittany and I are like the perfect partners. We both know both of our roles very well. Mm-hmm. And we're very comfortable in them.
So I'd invite our listeners, if you're in Atlanta, to find Melanated Fabrics and Creative Center. Stop by, look for Mimi, say hi. If she's there, if she's not, leave a note and say that they stopped to come and say hi.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Now, you were talking about the courses that you've taught, and you've taught a lot.
Yeah.
But in addition to teaching the skills of the course, you've inspired men and women to embrace their power, find their voice, discover their purpose. What inspires you, Mimi, and what messages do you share that have this effect of lifting people up?
You know, I honestly, I think, Meg, it's really all about being authentic, which is really mm-hmm. hard because of social media. I think people have gotten used to sort of the fakeness that happens. You know, it goes along with, you know, social media. It is what it is. But I've always been really open about my life, probably to the point where over the last maybe 6 or 7 years ago, I was like, yeah, I need to share less. you know, but, you know, people ask me all the time if I knew what sort of sensationalism would happen around my brand or, you know, that sort of internet celebrity thing, if I would have still done it. And I am almost certain I probably would not have done it. Mm-hmm. I'm not a very public person. You know, if you find me at a party, I'm probably like standing in a corner somewhere minding my business. I'm not as outgoing as people, I think, assumed that I was.
Sure.
Sort of becoming Mimi G forced me over the years to sort of have to be more open and be ready when people stop me in the street and they want pictures or want to talk to me or hug me or, you know, whatever it is. It has forced me to open up and you know, be more social. But at the end of the day, I'm an introvert all the way. Mm-hmm. And so for me, you know, having the sort of internet success that I've had has been really challenging over the years because you put your entire life out there and, you know, people are really sort of tough behind a keyboard. They say, you know, mean things. People don't always remember that there's a human person on the other side of that screen. Mm-hmm. And so all of that, you know, took adjusting. You know, all my good, my bad, my ugly has been seen on the internet. But I, you know, for me, it's like, listen, everybody has things that they've gone through in their life. Nobody is perfect. But if you only show the perfect, then people are only left to assume that something might be wrong in their life, that maybe something is missing in their life, when mm-hmm. in fact it's not, right? And when in fact it's everybody's life has good, bad, ugly, lows, highs. We just don't tend to share those things. And because I think I did that for so long, it gave my audience a really sort of deep connection to me where they feel like they know me. And so for that reason, I'm super grateful that I did it because when people do stop me, they can tell me all my kids' names. They can tell me their birthdays. They know what I was, you know, what I was wearing, you know, in December of last year. They're very much invested.
Yeah.
And so for me, that's, you know, that's really special. And I think that that authenticity has been what I've tried to share, which is why I started my podcast Business Shit, which I really do hope to get back to someday. It's mm-hmm. been very challenging. You know, Meg, you do a podcast.
I do.
With my schedule, it's very challenging, but I did it because I was getting tired of seeing all of these webinars, free webinars where you spend, you know, an hour of your time listening to somebody for them to upsell you on $1,000 course to tell you, you know, how to start a business or how, you know, turn your hobby into a success.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I should, you know, I could give you this information for free.
mm-hmm.
And so that's really what I wanted to do. I wanted to empower and let people know, listen, it's hard and it's a lot of work, but you can totally do this. And here's how I did it. And maybe it'll help you. And I think that that sort of, you know, speaks to people where people feel like, you know, every product that I've put out is not about money. You know, money has always come after. And, you know, that's one of the things that I hope I have taught people mm-hmm. is that if you start a business and you grow that business because it's something that's special to you and it's something that you would do even if you weren't being paid for, the money comes after, but your purpose has to be genuine, right? The purpose has to be genuine. And I think for me, my purpose has always been genuine. And so because of that, you know, money follows. That's sort of the benefit to it. You know, but I don't think everybody does that. And so, you know, on my, one of my bios on Instagram, I believe it says I'm a soul driven entrepreneur. And mm-hmm. I try to live that, you know, I try to live my life as best as I can. Doesn't mean I don't make mistakes or haven't made mistakes. I've made pretty bad ones actually over the years. you know, I've lost friends. I've, you know, made bad business decisions. But that's sort of the key. That's how you learn. That's how you grow. And from a dropout, you know, I dropped out of high school as I was pregnant. To be where I am today, I think that in itself is, you know, pretty inspiring. And so, you know, I hope that that's really what people see at the end of the day is that, you know, a little bit of grit and fortitude goes a long way.
Now you share a lot. It's that transparency and authenticity that has really made you successful and you've led with your purpose. What's one thing that your students and followers don't know about you, but they should?
I don't know if this answers the question exactly, but I just had a conversation with my best friend, Faith, not long ago, and she said something about she admired my ambition. And I paused and stopped her and I said, you know what? I'm not ambitious. Like, I know that people think I'm ambitious, but I'm not actually ambitious. If I could live in a cabin somewhere, like away from it, like I don't wake up every day and think, oh, what can I start today to grow or make another business, or I don't think that way. There have been so many things that I could have done to increase revenue or to create a new revenue stream that I don't, because I really love and admire and enjoy my peace.
Mm-hmm.
Because ambition is just not what drives me. And she said, well, you've done so much, you do so much. And I said, yeah, but that's because I don't ever want to go back to being that person sitting on the floor with hungry little kids with no lights on, trying to figure out what to do next.
Mm-hmm.
I never want to go back to that. So that is what drives me. It's not ambition. It's not money. It's just that I don't ever want to be in that position ever again. When I do interviews, people always say that you're so ambitious. You're so ambitious. And I'm always like, gosh, you have no idea. It's really just because I want to make sure that I can eat.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure that I can pay my mom's mortgage, that I can continue to pay for the kids, education and my grandkids. That's really what it is. It's just not ever wanting to go back.
Mimi, what's next for you? What's your dream?
I live my dream. I live my
okay.
dream every day. I do. I get to wake up and decide what I want to do with my day. And I never thought that would be possible. I used to budget literally down to the penny, Meg. Like if I was a penny off, I was like, where's the penny? to now be in a very secure financial stage in my life, to be able to wake up and say, I'm not working today, or I am working today, or hey, let's pack it up and, go on vacation and to be able to take care of my mom. That's mm-hmm. a big deal for me. I take care of my mom. I make sure that she has everything she needs. Even my oldest kids, cause they move out, but it doesn't stop.
Right. They move out, but they don't go away.
They don't go away. To be able to do all of those things, is really all I've ever wanted. I have a book coming out next year. I'm super excited about that. It's my very first book. I've put that off for many, many years. I'm excited about that. That is a dream come true for me. And I'm never going to stop. I mean, there's always new ideas that I have. I can't help that part of me. I'm a creative person on all levels. But I live a pretty charmed life. So I'm pretty happy right now.
Can you give us a sneak preview on the book and when we can expect to see it?
Yeah. So the book will be out hopefully first, second quarter of next year, is what we're hoping.
Okay.
And, the book is very much about fashion and style because that's what I'm known for, but it is a DIY book. And so, I take 7 base patterns, which are what, my sort of TNTs, tried and true patterns. And I take those 7 patterns and I modify them to create 19 new patterns. And then at the end of it, I turn those patterns into 109 looks that you can mix and match to have a lot of fashion and style ideas. It's really something I've always been excited about. And I think that people will really love it.
We'll look forward to that. And you said first or second quarter next year?
Yeah, hopefully.
Excellent.
It's a lot of work writing a book.
It is. So we've talked about a ton of stuff today, but is there one question I didn't ask you that you wish I had?
No, I can't think of anything.
Mimi, this has been great. You've shared so much with us and been incredibly inspiring. And I want to thank you for the time that you've given us today. If any of our listeners would like to reach out to you, and I have no doubt they will, what's the best way for them to do so?
Probably Instagram at Mimi G Style. I check all my DMs. Or you can always email. I check my emails too, then pass them off to the assistant. website, IG, I'm pretty reachable.
Excellent. Mimi, thank you again for joining us today.
Thank you, Meg.
Well, there you have it. Another story about someone just like you. Someone for whom sewing is so much more than a hobby. It's a way of life, and it's a connection to something bigger. If you know someone you think has an outstanding story, a story that should be shared on this podcast, please drop me a note to info@soandsopodcast.com or just complete the form on our website. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform and visit our website, soandsopodcast.com, for more information about today's and all of our guests. That's SEWANDSOpodcast.com. And finally, I want to thank Bernina for making this program possible. I'm Meg Goodman, and I look forward to you joining us next time. And so-and-so.